New sketch. How did we get here?
I led you here, sir. For I am Spartacus.
We're coming back! 5, 4, 3, 2...
Knock, knock, guess who is knocking at your door? That's right, you know it's the morning for sure.
Okay, hello everybody. Welcome to This Week in Mormons, Twim Sisters Edition. We have decided to rebrand ourselves, haven't we?
Yes, we have. Just in case you forgot, I'm Tiffany Hales.
I'm Ariane Smith, and we are the Twim Sisters. So we were at first calling ourselves Sisters in Zion because we live in Zion, but
we're sisters.
Yes, we are sisters. We realized, Jeff and Al pointed out, there's already a Sistas in Zion, very popular on Facebook and social media.
Yes, and we did not want to be confused with the Sistas in Zion, so we decided to call ourselves Twim Sisters.
Of course, Twim is for This Week in Mormons, so... Here we are, Twim Sisters.
Here we are, Twim Sisters. So that's going to be kind of our new rebranding, and what we're going by is we're going to be the Twim Sisters.
I know. Isn't it funny? We've rebranded after, what,
Third episode, and we're rebranding.
We're already rebranding. Oh, goodness. All right. So here we are. We are in the midst of summer, just finished 4th of July. By the way, if you hear background noise, we apologize. It is the 5th of July today when we're recording, and my teenage neighbors are still partying.
Exactly. They didn't get the memo that the fireworks ended yesterday. They're still lighting them off. There's lots of activity going on in this cul-de-sac, so you know, what can we say? It's Idaho.
It's a party. There's a lot of fireworks happening in Idaho.
Exactly. So our apologies for anything in the background that sounds like a firework. It probably is.
Yes. So, summer. How's your summer going?
Summer. We are a month into it. So school's been out for about 30 days. And for all you moms out there, summer brings its own set of challenges. Well, I am very glad to no longer have to be the homework police, because homework police is not a job I enjoy. The new set of challenges arises. And for me, with my teenagers, effective June 1st, I just have to give up any hope that my house is going to be clean for 90 days. It's just going to be trashed all the time.
Yes, for sure. I have sticky floors all summers because of the popsicles and the watermelon.
Oh, sticky floors.
But you know what? I really, actually really like summer, and I like it until August. It's kind of like snow after Christmas. Like, I don't care for snow after Christmas. I really love summer in June and July. I love not having homework. I love getting to see my kids a little bit more. I love not having such a set schedule. And I love the warm and going outside and the swimming. I love all of that until end of July, August. I'm so over it by then. I'm like, nope. I'm done. Had my share.
You're like, I'm ready for you children to go back to school.
Yes. So. By then they're fighting. Actually, they're already fighting. It's only been a month and yeah, they're going at it. But, you know.
Well, and your situation is a little different because your kids are younger than mine, where I've got the teenagers. You know, they're off doing their own thing, and they all have cars and phones. And so yeah. I have to track them on my app that we discussed the first time around.
That's right.
But for me, probably one of the best parts of summer is our neighbors behind us. They have a couple of kids that are the same age as my kids. They've got a 13-year-old girl who is the same age as my 13-year-old boy, and a 10-year-old boy who's the same age as my 10-year-old girl. And they are really good friends. They run in a pack together. And the best part of these neighbors, besides the fact that they really are wonderful people, they have a swimming pool.
I know, you are so lucky.
So every day they have swim time for about 2 hours, usually between about 12 and 2. And so my kids head over there every day and enjoy swim time with the neighbors. And it's wonderful.
Those are good neighbors to have.
They're very good neighbors to have. This is how I believe you should have a pool. You shouldn't actually own the pool. You need to be friends with people who own the pool. Then you get the advantages of using the pool without the cost or the maintenance of the pool. So that's true. My idea of having a swimming pool.
It's so true. You're very lucky. Very lucky. Okay, so all of your kids have been off. Since you have teenagers, yes. You have girls camp, you have scout camp, you have high adventures.
Yes.
Now, you need to give us the update on girls camp, because last time we talked, we heard about the modesty shaming and the girls camp. So your girls have now gone to camp and come home. And I think you came up with quite a clever solution on their shorts that you have to tell people about, because I'm just laughing. I think it's so funny.
Okay. All right. Well, yes, as you may recall, in our last episode, I talked about how there was a girls' camp kickoff and my daughter Shelby got modesty shamed for the shorts she was wearing. Well, I have a friend. She's not in my ward. She is perhaps in my stake. And I'm going to call her my inside source, or as I like to refer to her as the mole. So after our last podcast, the mole sent me a message on Facebook. And of course, she was aghast that, you know, Shelby had been modesty shamed. And she starts to tell me about what had happened that night at the girls camp kickoff event. And so I'm just going to read you part of what she wrote me, because it's really funny. She said, "You would have died at the hilarity of the skits where the youth are up there doing skits for all the girls on the rules of camp, chanting, 'Modesty is the hottesty,' all while wearing, you guessed it, the same 5-inch inseam shorts that every other girl in the building was wearing. I honestly didn't know whether to laugh or cry at the bizarreness of it all."
Oh my goodness. So they're doing these skits.
They were
chanting the chant. In their little shorts.
In their little shorts.
Because nobody really wears knee-length shorts, only to girls' camp.
Exactly. So, yes, that in the same shorts, the type of shorts that Shelby was wearing. So, yeah, that's the hilarity of it. So needless to say, you know, my girls were kind of, you know, concerned. They're like, "What in the world are we going to wear up there at girls camp?"
Right.
Because the kind of the initial conditions, and these actually evolved over time, and we'll get to that in a minute, but the initial conditions were that the shorts had to be, I think, at least down to their thighs or fingertip length, and that they couldn't be tight. They had to be loose fitting right. shorts, which essentially left basketball shorts.
Right.
So,
boys basketball.
Boys.
Well, I guess they make them like that for girls.
They make them like that for girls too, but they're hard to find. Yeah. Most of the girls' shorts that are athletic in nature are kind of like short running shorts.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we are cruising through the aisles at Walmart trying to figure out what we are going to, how we are going to appropriately dress these girls for girls' camp. And we come up with this ingenious idea. We head ourselves down the boys' underwear aisle and we pick out boxer shorts. Now, I did not know if the boxer shorts would be long enough. So I am ripping it open the packages of boxer shorts in the Walmart, holding them up to my daughter, goodness. Shelby. And I'm like, "Oh, yeah, they're long enough. She's kind of short." Plus, the other thing, I didn't know this. I don't spend a lot of time buying men's underwear other than at the church distribution center. That's where I seem to buy all my men's underwear. They come in all these fun colors and patterns, and they really do not look like boxer shorts. So uh-huh. I bought a set of boxer shorts for Shelby, and I bought a set of boxer shorts for Lauren, and laughed at the irony of their shorts that they wear on a daily basis are not acceptable for girls' camp, but men's underwear is.
That is so funny. Okay, so did you have to sew up the hole?
No, I mean, there was discussion amongst the girls whether I should sew up the hole. And quite honestly, when they were up there, they only ended up wearing them to bed. They didn't wear them around the camp. They just wore their regular shorts around the camp. Because, again, this brings me to the enforcement issue. So, again, the mole, my friend the mole, right. is sitting in a meeting. And this is what she says to me. She says, again, she sends me this in a Facebook message. She says, "I'll keep you posted on the shorts drama. Is it bad to say that I'm kind of excited to be a fly on the wall to watch how this is all going to go down? Today, I felt like I was an old sister from Relief Society in Brother Brigham's day as I helped our girls make cutoff jean shorts. And I just wanted to start chanting, retrenchment, retrenchment. And then she goes on to say, she says they've already amended the shorts rule. So they had amended the shorts rule and they decided that they could wear the shorts during free time over their swimsuits. Oh. Although she said it was a huge debate. And so somebody had asked, you know, what exactly it meant by cover up a swimsuit. And they said, you know, t-shirts, shorts. And somebody said, so you mean the shorter shorts? And they said, yes, right. They can wear the shorter shorts.
But only if they're free time only, on their way to swimming.
Yes, because someone in the meeting asked, well, when can they wear these?
Okay.
And the response was they could wear them during free time because that's when they can play in the creek and stuff. And then someone else said, well, if they're not playing in the water, can they still be wearing their swimsuit and shorts during free time?
Right.
She said she started laughing.
This brings up all kinds of technicality questions.
I know. Right? Like, do you have to be 100 feet from the creek? If you're more than 100 feet from the creek, do you then have to put your long pants on? You know, are we going to have people up there with measuring tapes going, you're too far from the creek. You can't wear your shorty shorts. Go put your long pants on. So I told my friend, the mole, I said, look, they're taking 300 girls up there. I said, I give enforcement of this shorts policy less than 24 hours. I said, by Tuesday at 3 o'clock, they're going to be so over trying to enforce the shorts policy.
That's a full-time job.
It's going to be a full-time job. Well, and the funny thing that the mole said is she said, all during these discussions about the shorts policy for girls camp, there was never any discussion about, well, if we tell her to change and she didn't bring anything, what's she going to wear?
Right.
Aren't the shorts better than having her run around in her underwear? She said there was never any thought to, if we tell them to change, what are they going to wear if they didn't bring anything?
Right.
Anyway, so sure enough, I asked my girls when they got home from girls camp. Well, first of all, they told me that there were a number of girls up there sporting boxer shorts. Oh. So apparently we were not the only ones with this idea.
Everybody went to Walmart to
buy their boxer shorts for camp. But my girls said that, they didn't. They said really the only time they enforced the no shorts was at dinner time and the more spiritual activities in the evening. But during the day, they just, I think they realized we got to pick our battles.
Right.
And this is not a battle we're going to pick.
Yeah, that's a losing battle for sure.
So anyway, but okay. I want to conclude this by, so my friend the mole, you know, she's talking to me in this Facebook conversation and she keeps talking about retrenchment. And I'm like, what in the world is she talking about? So I Google it. And apparently, so I Google Brigham Young and retrenchment. I don't know how I missed this in my church history lesson, but apparently I missed this in the church history lesson. So before it was the Young Women's Association, or the Young Women's, it was the Young Ladies Retrenchment Association.
Oh.
I know. And this was started by Brigham Young. And it was started by Brigham Young because, you hold that thought, he didn't like the way his daughters were dressing.
That's how Young Women's was founded.
Young Women's
was founded on the principle of a dad not liking the way his daughter was dressing.
I
had no idea.
I had no idea either. So I want to read this quote from Brigham Young. So he about his retrenchment association.
Okay.
Our daughters are following the vain and foolish fashions of the world. I want you to set your own fashions. Let your apparel be neat and comely and the workmanship of your own hands. Make your garments plain, just to clear ground length, without ruffles or pantiers or other foolish and useless trimmings and styles. And so I had to laugh when I read that because apparently, unbeknownst to me, this modesty debate has been going on for 150 years.
Wow.
So I don't expect it to end anytime soon. I think the debate of the spirit of the law versus the letter of the law will continue to rage on among active members of the church.
Oh, for sure. Okay, that just blows my mind. I just never picture pioneers having debates over modesty. I always thought of that as a modern day problem.
No, it is not a modern day problem.
You know what? That almost just makes me feel a little bit better.
You know, it kind of does me too, to be perfectly honest with you. I really thought that this had maybe started in the 60s with kind of the wild and outlandish right. fashions and trends that occurred in the 60s, but apparently not. Apparently, fancy and highfalutin clothing has always been a problem.
Oh, goodness.
Or maybe not a problem, just always been an issue. An yes. issue for some.
Topic of discussion.
Topic of discussion.
Amongst the saints.
A topic of discussion amongst the saints.
So, oh, that is great. That is a good little history lesson there.
It
I
is
like
a
it.
Great history lesson.
I like it. I like it. Okay. So what else is going on in your summer? You got your girls off.
I got my girls off, and we kind of had the convergence of activities in my ward. So in our stake, they like to get all the activities over with in the month of June, and then we just kind of take July off.
You know, I like that. I mean, it makes for a crazy June, but then you have the rest of the summer with your family. You can plan vacations.
It's true. It's true.
I like it. I think it's a good idea.
Although Scout Camp hasn't happened yet. Scout Camp's going to happen in July, but that was a factor of when they could get into the Scout Camp, not so much them right. being able to set their own schedule.
Right.
So the same week that I have my two teenage girls at High Adventure, I've got my, at Girls Camp, I've got my husband, who's our young men's president, off with the boys at High Adventure. So I'm trying to get my girls ready for girls camp,
right.
which for any of you who've ever gotten teenagers ready for girls camp, you've got secret sister gifts, and they're both YCLs, and so they had extra responsibilities and assignments because they were youth camp leaders. And so then I had to help my husband get ready for High Adventure. They just went up to the Stanley area, and they did some biking and hiking. But, the food prep, he likes to do a lot of food prep before they go up there and just do it in Sela meals so that he's just opening right. things and putting them in pans and stuff. But in the middle of all of this preparation, he pulls out his camp grill. Uh-huh. And we had fathers and sons earlier in the month of June because, again, as I mentioned, we want to get all activities over with in the month of June.
Wow.
So there was a different auxiliary other than young men's who was in charge of fathers and sons, mm-hmm. and they had asked to borrow my husband's camp grill. My husband is very into camping. He buys expensive camping equipment, and he maintains his expensive camping equipment.
Yes.
Because that is just his thing. So they had asked to borrow his camp grill, which he was not too excited about loaning out, but he takes his commitment that he made to dedicate all that he has to the upbringing and building of Zion very seriously.
Right.
So he loans the grill out. And I'm thinking to myself as he pulls the grill. So they return it to him, which, you know, right. first of all, that's amazing it even got returned.
That's the first step. That's good.
That's good. And so he pulls the grill out and to load it on the truck. And I said, uh-huh. You ought to check and see if they cleaned it. So he opens it up. Sure enough, grill is not cleaned.
Oh.
Got returned to him from fathers and sons dirty. And I'm sure it was probably just an oversight. But, I just want to put it out there because I know that this happens a lot.
Right.
Is that, we as saints, we borrow stuff from each other and we share stuff with each other. And I think that that's great, But I just, if you're going to borrow something, return it in the same or better condition than it was given to you. I think that that's a great way to express your gratitude is by returning what you borrowed in better condition than when you borrowed it. So I'm just putting it out there for everybody who goes and borrows something. Just think about that. Am I showing my gratitude by the condition that I return the item?
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, he ended up having a great time at High Adventure. They biked and hiked and did all sorts of boy things that don't interest me at all. But it was a good bonding experience for him and the boys and the leaders that went.
That's fun. So that was his last big thing of the summer.
That was
young men's president.
Yes, that was his last big thing.
Goes. I always say, I think young men president. Probably just as much work as bishop, don't you think, as far as callings?
For sure.
Especially in the summer.
For sure.
And have to take so much time off. Yeah. And young women's president, too. Those youth callings require a lot. So.
Well, just in the month of June alone with mm-hmm. various and assorted youth activities. He missed 8 working days wow. in the month of June. So, you know, and I know we receive blessings from it, so right. I never complain about it, but you know, I'm not sure. And he's self-employed, so it's not like he has vacation time.
Right, right.
And so, but sometimes I'm not sure people realize, you know, it is a sacrifice. And again, I am not complaining about the sacrifice. He's a great young men's president. He's been in there for 4.5 years, which is unreal. But he truly loves the boys.
Oh, he's so good.
And
he does lots yeah. of fun things with them.
And the boys love him.
Yeah.
So
yeah, he's great. Well, you are you're a good wife. You're a good sport about it. My husband was in young men's one time, one stint, and he went on a high adventure and took, you know, I don't know, 4 days off of work. And I was feeling super jealous. I was like a little bit of a bitter wife because all of his time off work that summer was hanging out with the young men, having fun. I was like, I want to go on vacation.
You wanted to save those days for vacation days.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyway.
Yes.
That's probably why his stint in Young Men's was so short. His wife was...
You were a cranky wife.
He's kind of a brat about it.
You did not support him as you said no. that you would, or sustain him in his calling, as you said that you would when you raised your arm to the square.
I know.
You know what this means? He's going to get another stint in Young Men's and you're going to get a chance to repent.
Oh.
Sorry.
Don't say that.
Okay.
All right. So yes, 4th of July just got over. We went back. We went back to Portland to visit friends and had a good time hanging out with our old friends. And Portland in the summer is fabulous. So it was a really good time of year to go.
Was your weather good?
The weather was good. Portland rains so much, and I always say the reward for all that rain is the amazing summer. Portland, nothing beats a Portland summer. Everything's green, everything's pretty, the temperature is like 80 degrees. Perfect. So it was a good time of year to go. And then we came back late night back to Idaho for 4th of July. And 4th of July in Idaho is just, it's a party.
It is a party, especially, you haven't been here for 4th of July in a while. And in Oregon, you know, there's none of these fireworks that shoot in the air, firecrackers.
There are some, but not like here. I remember last summer, our first 4th of July back here, we were driving home from your house after dark and just driving across, you know, through the country roads to get back to our place. You could just look out in the distance and there are just fireworks everywhere. And that's how it was last night.
Yeah.
You could just hear the banging and the boom echoing everywhere.
Yeah.
Everyone's doing fireworks. It's just, it's pretty fun.
It's true. So we had a pretty low key 4th. We just had some friends over for a barbecue. And then, you know, when we were finished eating, we went across the way to my friends with the swimming pool and we hung out at their house.
Oh, nice.
And then we all went into the cul-de-sac and another neighbor had a big wagon full of we call them illegal fireworks, although technically they're not illegal, but the fireworks that go in the air.
Right.
And so we watched him shoot off all his fireworks.
Oh, that's the way to do it. It's good to have neighbors like
yes.
that. All right. Well, next thing we wanted to say is we wanted to tell Al, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. After kind of being poked and prodded by us, he finally shared the story of his engagement and
exactly.
his wedding, and we were quite satisfied.
Yes, yes,
more,
we were.
More than enough information to make us happy.
The information satisfied us, and we were pleased. So.
We were very pleased. But it kind of sparked my memory on an article that we both read a few months ago. I
yes.
think it came out in April. Just hearing about Al's engagement and how quick it was and how he just did this destination wedding and was like, hey, we're getting married in a month. Whoever can come, come. And whoever can't, no big deal.
Yeah.
I loved it. And so there was this article that we had read a few months ago. It was back in April and it was in the New York Times. And it was about a girl, actually a Mormon girl, did a similar kind of thing, actually even less time. The title of the article was, I Planned My Wedding in 5 Days, and You Could Too. And I loved it. And this girl, you know, for being a Mormon girl, we have our traditions,
yes,
as Mormons,
yes,
with our weddings. And don't you think over the years it's kind of gotten bigger?
Oh, yes. I mean, it used to be, you know, it used to be everybody would have their reception in the gym.
Right.
You know, you never really rented a reception,
yeah,
center.
And now,
like, you, if you don't rent a reception center and you use the gym, it's kind of like, you're using the gym.
I think so too, especially in Utah. I think,
yeah,
that Utah culture,
yeah,
it's really exploded.
Yeah.
And some here in Idaho,
exactly,
too.
Exactly. It's bled over here in Idaho.
So I loved this article. It was about this girl. Her name was Emily Hardman. And I don't know how old she is. Does it say how old she is?
I don't know if it said how old she
is. I think she's a 20-something.
Yeah.
So she's youngish, but her whole attitude was so mature. So her fiance proposed to her. They were in Arizona in the wilderness, in the mountains, and he got down and proposed to her. And they immediately, right then and there, said, they kind of like talked about their future, and he had some job opportunities coming up and she had some job opportunities coming up that were going to kind of take them different directions across the country. And they write kind of then and there said, you know what, if we don't get married, you know, in a week or so, we're probably going to have to wait a while, like a year or so, before our schedules, you know, line up to do this.
Before the planets align.
Yes, before the planets align. So they just then and there said, let's just do it. Let's get married in a week. So she literally planned her wedding in 5 days.
Wow.
So she said from that mountain, wherever they were when he proposed to her, she first called her mom and told her mom.
Okay, well, that's probably a good thing to,
yes,
do. Now, I would like to know the reaction of her mom. You know, as a mom, if my daughter is calling me saying, hey, guess what? I got a ring. I'm engaged. I'm very happy. And then she says, guess what? I want to get married in a week.
I know.
I'm like, mortified.
I know, but you know what? In the article, it sounds like her mom was totally cool with it. And
okay.
Here's why. She's the youngest of six kids.
Oh, yes.
At that point in time, her mom's totally over doing the wedding thing. She's like, no.
Yes. I have six kids, and only one of my kids has gotten married. I guarantee you, by the time,
right,
I get to the youngest, number six, I'm not going to care.
Right.
I am not. I will,
yeah,
be so on board with a five-day wedding.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So she calls her mom. Then she calls the caterer and, like, the location, because they were going to have it at a location. And it was funny in the article, she describes the conversation, uh-huh, with the caterer. And the caterer's mind is just blown. She's like, what? In 5 days you want food? And she's just guessing on numbers. She throws out the number, 100 people or so. And the caterer's like, how is this possible? And the girl says, well, you do it all the time for funerals, right? Why can't you do it for a wedding? And that totally makes sense, right?
It does make sense.
So
it makes a lot of sense,
the girl
actually
just told her, if we have less people come, then we'll have extra food, and that's okay. If we have more people come, I'll tell my family to eat last. And so the caterer's asking her about flowers, and she says, I'm not going to do flowers. And the caterer says, okay, well, what about napkins? Do you have colors? Do you want me to get napkins in a certain color? And she just says, oh, just pick whatever's cheapest. I don't care.
Okay, this is a very common sense bride.
I know.
I can kind of respect that.
I know. I totally dig it. As I'm reading this whole article, I'm just like, Emily, I respect you, girlfriend.
Okay, so how did they send out the invitations? How did they tell people?
Text message. Isn't that awesome?
That's so awesome.
They just texted, like, close friends and family, uh-huh, and said, hey, this is where we're getting married in 5 days. If you can make it, great. If you can't, don't feel bad. It's okay. Very similar to Al, right?
Exactly.
So they did. She got together a wedding dress. I think it said that she bought a skirt. Or no, she bought a lacy shirt at some store in the mall or something. And then her mom made her kind of a skirt to go with it, a white skirt.
Perfect.
And I looked at the pictures and it's beautiful.
Yeah, you can't tell.
So beautiful. And she just looks like just this young, cute bride. You would never know that she planned this in a week. She's very stylish girl.
Yeah.
So I don't think she's a girl that's just not into that.
Yeah.
I think she just, you know, is very mature. And it quoted one thing in the article. It said that with everything along the way, as she was planning this in 5 days, she asked herself, does this achieve the goal of making the people at my wedding feel loved and appreciated? And will it help strengthen my marriage and the promises that we made to each other? And she said, if the answer was no, I didn't waste any more time on it.
Okay, now that I really, really like.
I know.
Because I think so often brides get caught up in the wedding and forget that this isn't about a wedding, it's about a marriage.
Right.
You know,
I think so too.
The wedding will last for a day. The marriage is going to last for eternity. So
I think so too.
I really appreciate her attitude on that.
I loved it. I thought it was great. And I actually have thought many, many times before even reading this article, if I could go back and do mine differently, there are so many things I would do differently. Mostly because it probably put the most stress on you.
Yes. Yes, it did.
You were my main girl.
Yes, yes, it was.
Tiffany helped me with everything, the dress, the food, the decor, you, everything. So, I mean, honestly, if I could go back now that I'm more mature and older, I mean, I was a young bride. I was only 21. And I don't think I was bridezilla, but there were definitely efforts put yes. into it.
No, you were not bridezilla in any way, shape, or form. And we should probably just give a brief explanation here. Our mom has passed away. And so that is why I was helping Ariane with all of her wedding stuff. But I literally had a baby 2 months before her wedding.
I know. And now that I've had babies, I know what I put you through. I'm like, oh goodness, I did not understand at the age of 21 what I was asking of you.
Well, you know, what's so funny is it's one of those things where, you know, it wasn't even a pause in my mind about it. It was like, this is what needs to be done. This is what my mother on the other side of the veil is expecting from me. And so I do not doubt for a moment that I got a lot of help from the other side, right. in helping you with your wedding. So
right.
I don't doubt that at all. I personally would not go back and change anything. Oh. I thought it was just fine.
Oh, well, that's fine. So. That's lovely. You know what I would do if I could go back? I would like skip the decorations, skip the flowers. I would have a backyard barbecue and I would just invite like really close friends
yeah.
and, you know, family. And you know what I would do? Instead of a cake, I would have Swig cookies and an Italian soda bar. Doesn't that sound fun?
That would be so fun.
And I would tell people not to dress up. I'd be like, wear your shorts.
Yeah, that would be so fun. So now our goal needs to be, because you have three girls and I have three girls. So between us, we're going to have six weddings at
yeah.
some point in time in the future to plan. We need to encourage our girls
yes.
that they need to go minimalistic.
For sure.
We need to cut them off of Pinterest. If they have wedding boards on Pinterest, we need to shut those down.
That's for sure. And you know what? I think half the battle with this kind of wedding plan, this quick, simple wedding plan, is getting the parents on board, right? Because
exactly.
obviously lots of times the parents want to invite, you know, lots and lots of people, all their friends.
Exactly.
So you got to get the parents on board if you're going to do this. And you and I are on board.
We're on board.
So
now we just get to get our kids on board.
Yes.
There are some children that will be easier and there were some children
yes.
that will be a little more difficult.
That middle child of mine.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be a full-on, full blowout princess affair, I'm afraid.
She's going to want fanciness.
Oh, yes. Yes, so. She will.
We'll have to work on her.
Okay.
So anyway, I liked that story. It was fun. And we liked hearing Al's story. So
yes.
thank you for sharing.
So now that we don't have your wedding, Al, to banter back and forth with, we have decided that we need to come up with a new topic to banter back and forth between Jeff and Al. So this is what we've decided our new
yes.
thing is going to be. We have never personally met Jeff and Al. We have a complete social media, internet relationship with Jeff and Al. We have never met them personally. So we want to throw down the challenge to Jeff and Al that they need to come visit the lovely state of Idaho. We will entertain them here. We will show them a good time in Boise. And they can see what Idaho is all about and why we love living
That's
here.
That's right. We know they travel a lot. They can come this way.
Exactly.
And bring their lovely wives. We can float the river.
It's very true. Boise has a very large river running through it. And in the summertime, you can float the river
on
tubes.
The river.
It's very fun.
That's what you do. Or they could come for the open house, the temple open house in the fall.
Oh, that's what they need to do. The Meridian Temple has its open house pretty much the month of October in the fall. That's what Jeff and Al need to do. They mm-hmm. need to come to the Meridian Temple open house.
So
okay.
There's your challenge.
There's your challenge, Jeff and Al.
All right. Should we move on to some news stories?
We probably ought to move on to some news stories now that we've chatted. So, okay. So the first one that I want to talk about, and this happened last week. Well, maybe about 10 days or so ago, but it got a lot of play in the media last week. Elder Holland was speaking, I believe it was to new mission presidents sometime around the end of June. And he was telling them, you know, kind of inspiring them about some of the work and stuff that would be done while they were on their mission. And he tells this story.
The coolest story.
The coolest story. And I have to tell you, you know, when I first heard this story, I thought, you know, if anybody other than President Holland would have been telling this story, I would have said, no, this is Mormon folklore.
Oh, I
you
so
are
agree.
Making this up.
This totally sounds like one of those fake stories.
Exactly.
That gets spread through Mormon culture like wildfire.
Exactly.
Told over sacrament meeting pulpits.
Exactly. That is initially what I thought. And, you know, but again, because it is coming out of Elder Holland's mouth, I know that he is not going to be promulgating Mormon folklore.
Oh no, he's not going to mess around.
I know this story is true. So, the story begins with a young man who grows up in Pocatello, and he's LDS and has an LDS family, by the time he's about 18 or 20, he's kind of disillusioned with his family and disillusioned with the LDS church. So he just up and leaves his family one day and doesn't tell him where he's going. They don't have any contact with him. The story talks about his parents felt like he was alive. They didn't feel like he'd passed away, but they just didn't know where he was. And so for years and years, his parents just prayed that, you know, someday their son would return to them. And so fast forward about 20 years, there is a young missionary who is assigned to work in Los Angeles. They're somewhere in the Los Angeles area. Mm-hmm. And this man is living in Los Angeles. And he's lived kind of a hard life. He's been involved with some gangs, you know, done some drugs and things like that. Just kind of a very hard life. And he just kind of despises the LDS church. And so this young missionary that is assigned to this Los Angeles mission, he and his companion are walking down the street one day, and they walk past this gentleman's house. And the gentleman sees the missionaries walking past, and he has a couple Doberman pinchers. And his Doberman pinchers go up to the gate, and they're barking and yelling and carrying on at the missionaries. And he's kind of proud of that. He reflects that he was proud that the missionaries wouldn't stop and bother him because he has these dogs. So the elders walk on down the street, a couple houses down, and all of a sudden the elders stop and they begin whispering back and forth to each other. And then they turn around and they approach this man's house. And so as they approach this man's house, the Dobermans stop barking and the Dobermans retreat. And the Dobermans, they can tell that it's safe to enter the gate. So they enter the gate, and this guy's just kind of amazed that his Dobermans aren't going after these elders. So the elders begin a conversation with this man. And in the course of the conversation, they ask him if he's from California, and he says, oh no, I'm from Pocatello, Idaho. And one of the elders says, well, I'm from Pocatello, Idaho too. Do you know so-and-so? And the guy is kind of taken back, and he says, well, yes, they're my parents. And the elder says, well, they're my parents too.
Wow.
I know. So he says, the elder says to him, I was sent here by Heavenly Father to bring you home. And come to find out, after this child had left, his parents had had this boy, and he was unaware that he had this younger sibling because he hadn't been in contact with his parents. But the younger sibling was very well aware of him because his parents had been, you know, praying for him for 20 years.
But they didn't know he was in California.
No, they did not know he was in California.
Nobody
knew where he was.
Oh, that's amazing.
And so anyway, so they obviously, this broke down a few walls, and they started, you know, reactivating him and teaching him the discussions, and he becomes active in the church again. And Elder Holland says it accumulates with him getting sealed to his wife in 2015 in the Boise Temple.
Oh.
And so just an amazing experience. And Elder Holland's point in this story was, you know, just how often the Spirit played a role, that the Spirit played a role in the parents continually praying for this son, The spirit played a role in calling the younger son to the mission in California. The spirit played a role in those missionaries stopping and pausing and listening to the spirit that they needed to go back and listen to this man. The spirit played a role in the dogs retreating, and that all of these things had to align up for this to happen.
Right.
And just an absolutely amazing story that I think just shows there are no coincidences. That could just not be that coincidental. And anyway, it's got a lot of talk and chatter about it. And like I said, you would think it was Mormon folklore if it hadn't come out of President.
Right.
I think I keep saying President Holland. That dates me. He was President Holland to me because I was at BYU when he was the president.
Right.
And so I have a hard time referring to him as Elder Holland. So if I refer to him as President Holland, I'm sorry. Old habits are hard to break.
Yeah, it was a great story. I think it says so much about the power of prayer.
Yes.
From a parent.
Exactly.
And never giving up. And we've seen that with certain family members.
Absolutely.
In our families. It's, you just never know.
Yep. So you just got to keep praying and keep hoping.
Yep. Very good. Very good one. Okay. The next story we wanted to hit on was LDS Church ushers in the modern era with parental leave, pants for women, and jacketless dress perks for employees. we like this one. I didn't realize, but they've now changed the dress code at the church office building. I did not realize that women still had to wear skirts or dresses there. I probably just never crossed my mind, but it makes sense. If you can't wear shorts at BYU Idaho, I'm sure that they're still making people wear dresses at the church office buildings, right?
And, you know, I was actually aware of this policy because I have a friend of mine who used to work for LDS Social Services, and she had to wear a dress and a skirt every day. And she might have been a little grumpy about that.
Oh, yeah, I could see. So this is huge news.
This is really huge news.
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting because, you know, while this is huge news, I wonder, okay, how much change is actually going to take place?
Right.
You know, because the employees are used to wearing dresses. Are they still going to wear dresses?
Right. And their white shirts. Are the people who work at the church office building just white shirt type of guys?
Exactly.
They might be.
And if you're a colored shirt type of guy, do you dare wear your colored shirt and show that you are breaking with tradition? Although it is allowed.
Oh, the office dynamics.
But I have to tell you, you might not be able to get, with this policy change, it might result in the cost of colored shirts going up in price. And the reason that I say this is for a period of time, I, of course, lived in Provo, as we have discussed, with my then husband, Rick. And both of our husbands now, Keith, Ariane's husband, is a white shirt purist.
Yes. He's a white shirt guy all the way.
And my husband, Darren, is a white shirt purist. Nary a colored shirt will enter his closet. Uh-huh. My former husband, Rick, was not a white shirt purist.
He did not appreciate the white shirts.
Although he usually wore them to church, but for work, he'd always wear a colored shirt. And the beauty of living in Utah County is I could go hit a clearance sale at Macy's because nobody else was buying the colored shirts. I could pick up colored shirts for him for $6-7, dirt cheap, on clearance at Macy's.
Okay, that is so funny that they're cheaper there.
Oh, because nobody buys them, so they have to clearance them all out because everybody's buying the white shirts.
Oh, I never would have thought.
Yes.
That's so funny.
Yes.
Okay.
So I say good for the church in allowing a little more liberalness in the dress code and
for
hopefully,
sure.
You know, that those who want to take advantage of the trend will. I personally think I love a man in a colored shirt with a sharp tie.
Right.
I think there's not. When I'm in the men's section at Macy's or Dillard's or something, I see those colored shirts lined out with the pretty ties. I think, oh, that's really sharp looking.
I like them too. I think they're fun.
So,
and I especially this. I just think the maternity leave is great.
Yes.
I did not realize they didn't have any paid maternity leave. So, I think this is great move for a church that, you know,
promulgates families
for sure
to have 6 weeks of
for sure. So now
paid maternity leave.
Female employees will get 6 weeks of paid, and then male employees, I think, will get
one week
paid, but then up to a certain number of other weeks unpaid, I think, is what it said.
Well, and that would, I'm sure, be under the Family Medical Leave Act,
right? But, which they already had, I'm sure. So.
So yeah, paid maternity leave, good move. We like it.
We like it. Yes, we do.
It's a good time to be a church employee, I guess.
It's a great time to be a church employee. You can now wear your pants and your colored shirts.
Yes. Yes, for sure. All right. Do you want to do the Uchtdorf next?
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
This was fun.
So this week, President Uchtdorf, on his Facebook page, he releases this video. And this video is about, it's literally 30 years old. It was done in 1987. And it's in Germany. And what had happened is the Frankfurt, Germany temple was about to be dedicated. And so at that point in time, he was apparently in charge of he was the chair of the temple committee. He was a stake president. And then he was also the chief pilot for Lufthansa at that time. So he had been asked by this German talk show, kind of news talk show, right, to come on and talk about the temple, because this was a really big deal that this temple was built and being dedicated.
Right.
And so originally it was only supposed to be just a 2-3 minute interview, just hitting some highlights of the dedication and whatnot. But then they had a breaking news story that didn't materialize. So it ends up going on for, I think, about 10 minutes.
Yeah, I think it's 9 or 10 minutes.
9 or 10 minutes. And so he, throughout this interview, is able to just explain, you know, the purpose of temples, the purpose of families. He talks a lot about some of the principles of the gospel and why we do the things that we do. And it's a really fun interview.
It's cool. Everybody needs to go watch it.
Exactly.
He's speaking in German, but there are subtitles, so you can see what he's saying. And his voice is the same, even though it's German. And he's still... he's got his little bit of silver hair. He's still the silver fox.
Well, I would say in this video, he's not quite the silver fox. He's just barely getting a little gray.
Just a little.
And I would call him more the black fox still.
He's young. It's fun to see, though. Very fun.
Well, and the best part of it is, I mean, we always talk about how stylish President Uchtdorf is in his dress. I know Jeff and Al always comment about how he changes his tie between every conference session. Well, he is sporting the 80s style. Yeah. It is so great.
He's got the skinny tie.
He's got the very skinny tie. He's wearing a gray suit. But here's the best part. He's got on white socks. So he's wearing white socks with these kind of maroon-colored shoes that match his tie.
Right.
And I'm sure he just, if you saw a GQ magazine from that day, he would just be right in line with the style from that day.
Oh, for sure. Very stylish. And I love he jokes about it because he posted this on his Facebook page, right? And in the post, as he's explaining what it is, he jokes about his... fashionable skinny tie and white socks.
Yes, he does.
Such a good sense of humor.
Yes. And he encourages people. He says, but as I go back and watch this interview, the thing that strikes me most is that even now, 30 years later, the questions and the answers we spoke about are very timely today.
Yeah.
And it's true. I mean, it's interesting to see that these questions he was asked 30 years ago are the very same questions he gets asked today, I'm sure, when he does any sort of media interview.
Yep, for sure. So very interesting.
He was laying the groundwork for his future apostleship.
I know. He was prepping. He was ready. So, all right. Okay, next story we have. This is a fun one. Another Mormon Tabernacle Choir story. We love these Motab stories.
We're big fans of the Motab, not going to lie.
We are big fans. That's passed down from our father.
Yes. Yes, it is.
You cannot be in our family and not appreciate the Motab.
Yes. Big Noel, huge Motab listener. Music and the spoken word every Sunday.
Every Sunday. Religiously.
Yes.
Every Sunday. So... this story is fun. This is actually about a program at the Utah State Prison with the inmates. It's a choir program. And the choir director, the Motab director, Mac Wilberg, has gotten involved in going out to the prison and teaching, helping lead the choir of these inmates. And I just think it's just really fun. I didn't know that this was even happening, but they've assembled this choir out at the prison through Wasatch Music School, who has come out and led different workshops and different classes for inmates to work on their musical skills and be in this choir. So Matt Wilbert got involved. And, technical difficulties. Mac Wilbur got involved. And when he came out the first time, they were thinking it would be a one-time thing, I think. But it sounds like he decided to continually be involved. And he is going out there, says he averages about once a week. Since Easter, he's been going out about once a week to lead this choir. And they're singing lots of classical music and... when he's not there, he has a co-director at the prison who is one of the inmates. It says this inmate, his last name is Pitt. What's his first name?
I wanted to say it was like Ronald Pitt.
Ronald Pitt. That sounds right. So he's an inmate, and he also has a PhD level education.
Roland Pitt.
There it is. So this inmate has a PhD level education in classical piano performance, and he plays organ and a little bit of string bass and has taken up the violin. So very musical inmate, and he's become the co-director with Mac Wilbert. And when Mac Wilbert can't make it out, Pitt leads the choir.
Yes.
So
I love this story.
I do too.
I love this story for a number of reasons. First of all, I'm a huge Mac Wilbert fan. Yeah. You know, my first husband, Rick, when he was at BYU, he sang in men's chorus. And at that point in time, Mac Wilbert was a professor at BYU. He was not with the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. And Rick sung for him. And Rick absolutely loved it. Mac is hard. You know, I mean, he expects a lot. His expectations are pretty high. And I loved it when he took over the choir because the choir was just kind of a little ho-hum. And then Mac stepped in and now they are zippy, zippy, zippy.
I agree.
and he's just an amazing director. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, for him to sacrifice that time, because, you know, I'm sure he has a lot of demands on his time.
He's got to be so busy.
Exactly. Yeah. And for him to sacrifice his time and go out to the prison and teach these men and give these inmates, again, you know, to me, I look at it as I think he's giving these inmates hope. You know, they're setting goals, they're learning, and to work with a director of the caliber of Mac Wilbert. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for anybody who's ever looked into getting into the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, it is not an easy feat to get into the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. Right. It's a pretty rigorous application process. And so, you know, it kind of makes you go, well, gee, if I want to sing for Mac, maybe I should go commit a felony in Utah.
We do not recommend that.
No, we do not recommend that. But
yeah, I think it's really cool. Very cool. And probably boosts them up and helps them feel really good that this guy's willing to come and
donate his time. So kudos to Mac for the donation of his time to teach these inmates.
We like it.
We like it.
Mm-hmm. All right. What's next?
I think we're going to talk about the Conference for Divorced Saints.
Right. So you saw this on Facebook.
Well, yeah, I saw it on the This Week in Mormons page.
Right. And you should speak about this. You've been there, done that.
I will speak about this. I have been there, done that. So in 2008, you know, my husband and I separated, and then our divorce was ultimately finalized in 2010. And you know, we're such a culture that focuses on marriage and families and, you know, being together for eternity. And I certainly, when I went into my marriage, never anticipated that it would end in divorce. And it was just a really, really difficult time period in my life. And so the title of this conference is Divorce Saints Turning Grief into Growth Through Jesus Christ. Right. And I think that could not be any more appropriate. And that is kind of what I took away as I worked through my grief with my divorce is the growth and the reliance that I had to have upon the Savior. So
right.
Anybody who is in the Salt Lake area, it is July 8th, which I believe is this Saturday,
right.
At the LDS Stake Center at 135 A Street in Salt Lake City. So
if you're in
that situation, that might be a really great workshop to attend.
Yeah, sounds like a good event. Good event. Okay. Next story, we just had to talk about this one because it is fascinating. This one ran in the Salt Lake Tribune. No, this was Deseret News Story. This guy is about a drug kingpin living in Utah. From Mormon kid to alleged drug kingpin, inside the rise and fall of Aaron Shammo.
Yes.
And this was just fascinating. So this kid, he's 26 years old, grew up in a Mormon household in Arizona, I believe, in Phoenix. He had kind of a troubled youth, it sounded like, because it said his parents sent him off to one of those wilderness camps a few times.
Yes. Well, according to the article, apparently they caught him smoking marijuana a couple of times.
Right.
And this, like, freaked them out. And so they sent him to a couple of these wilderness camps.
Oh, it was for marijuana.
It was for marijuana.
Okay.
But his sisters say their take on it was they didn't really think he was that bad of a kid.
Oh.
You know, they thought his behavior was just kind of normal, and that, you know, although they didn't come out and say it, they kind of insinuated that maybe his parents might have
overreacted. Okay.
But
okay,
that doesn't excuse what he ultimately
right.
did.
Right. So he ends up going up to Provo for college, right?
Yes.
UVU. And so he does UVU for a little while, then stops doing UVU. And
well, he considers himself kind of a nerd. And and while he was at UVU, he got into Bitcoin.
Oh, right.
When Bitcoin was kind of a big deal. So he starts trading Bitcoin.
Which I still don't understand Bitcoin.
I don't understand Bitcoin either.
That's another topic.
So
anyway, eventually, I don't know how he started into it, but he gets into this drug ring. He found out that he could order fentanyl
yes.
from China. And get it shipped to himself, and he could put it into pills and sell it as opiates, different varieties of
exactly.
different kinds of opiates. And of course, when you order fentanyl from China, it's like when you order anything from China,
yeah.
right? You don't really know what
you
you're getting.
You don't really know what you're getting. And he wouldn't put straight fentanyl into the pill. He would mix the fentanyl with like an other, because the straight fentanyl in a pill would just kill you.
Right.
So there was fentanyl in the pill, but it was mixed
so
in with
mix it.
Other substances. And then he had a pill press, and he was pressing these pills to look like Xanax and Vicodin and all sorts of other drugs like that. And then he would sell these. And what would happen is, because he's, you know, just kind of mixing these in his home, so to speak, I mean, you might get a pill that has a lot of fentanyl in it, or you might get a pill that doesn't have very much fentanyl.
Right.
And fentanyl is apparently, I can't remember what they said, something like 30 times more powerful than morphine.
Right.
It's an extremely powerful drug. And so, you know, you get a pill that has a high content of fentanyl and your history. But he would sell these on the internet. There was this, it's called a dark net, is
right.
how they referenced it.
The underground kind of internet.
The underground kind of internet. And there were pharmacies on the dark net that you could go and order these drugs. And it also talks about how the longer he did this, the more sloppy he got.
Right.
Which is kind of how they were able to catch him.
Right. And I think he had some, didn't he have a couple people working for him, helping him?
He had some people helping
him. That turned on him, which
exactly.
is, you know, usually how these things go.
And what's really interesting, they had all worked at eBay together.
Oh.
eBay has a big facility in Utah, and my oldest son Scott works at eBay. Now, these gentlemen weren't there when he started, but he's got a really good friend who's on his same team. They were mission companions, and these gentlemen were there when Josh knew these gentlemen.
That's how they all connected.
So that's how they all connected. And so
when they arrest this kid, they find $1.2 million in cash.
Yes.
In his house. And he has a lovely home in the
yes.
Cottonwood Canyon, right?
He's living in Cottonwood Heights. And so the neighbors kind of, you know, they've got this 26-year-old kid who's living next to him in, you know, essentially a million-dollar
house. And driving a BMW.
And driving a BMW.
and fancy everything. And they always wondered how he made his money. Yeah. And he just said Bitcoin.
Exactly.
And nobody understands Bitcoin. So Exactly. Everybody says, sure.
Great. Makes sense to us. Yeah. And apparently, you know, he was well-dressed and polite and, Yeah. You know, didn't exhibit the typical things that you would think of as a drug dealer. So, you know, they wouldn't, you know, nobody knew he was a drug dealer. And so when he got arrested, the article is really interesting. It's a long article. I encourage anybody who's interested to go read it. When I was teaching Sunday school a couple of weeks ago, I told my people, I can't remember. Oh, we were talking about the word of wisdom, and I tied it into my word of wisdom lesson. I said, you ought to go read this article. And it was interesting because he talked about how he'd had this foreboding feeling that something Right. Was going to happen. And literally the DEA, the SWAT team, they all come inside his house. He's sitting there playing video games when they bust open Right. Through windows and doors and everything.
Right.
And he's pled not guilty to his charges. His charges are still pending. And there's pictures in the article if you want to see what $1.2 million of cash looks like. It's unreal.
Piles and piles of cash. Anyway.
Exactly. So
it's fascinating. So he's waiting to find out what will happen to him.
Yes.
Anyway, we're particularly fascinated with his story because we may or may not have a close relative with a very similar story.
Yes.
That is a story for another day.
That is a story for another day. But when we both read this, I read it first, and then I said, Ariane, you got to read this. This reminds me of, and then I filled in the blank with who it reminded me of.
Right. Yes.
So anyway, sad, kind of a sad story, but also, mm-hmm. you know, I thought it was a very interesting, you know, from a parent's perspective, wondering, you know, how do teenagers and kids get access to these opiate drugs
Right. And
some of the dangers of them getting access to these opiate drugs. And so it was educational for me in the, with regards to my teenagers
Yeah. And
in what's happening and how this is happening.
Yeah, for sure. It's, you know, it's pretty scary, some of the stuff Yep. That's out there. So, all right, next story is about food storage.
It is. Ooh. So it is about food storage. Let's see if I can get the, it says, it's entitled, this is in the Church News, and it says, two LDS women aim to dispel food storage myths.
I like it.
I like it too.
I like it a lot. So this article talks a lot about how much money goes into food storage
Yes. Unnecessarily. Exactly.
And they don't directly aim this at any particular company, but Yes. You know, they're talking about all of these kind of startup food storage companies Yes. That kind of play on
Yeah. The
food storage Yes. Aspect of the church and make loads of money on their Exactly. Dehydrated goods and storage systems. And
well, and they kind of market it as buy this, tuck it in a corner, never touch it unless you need it, sort of
Right. That
thing.
Right.
And so that you can then like, oh, I'm going to check that off the box.
Right.
I've got some food Right. Storage for a year.
That is true. Although some of them, these dehydrated ones, market it as use it, taste it, it's good. Because Yeah. There was a girl in my ward that was selling them for a while, the dehydrated vegetables and fruits. And she would do taste tests. Like she'd come to your house and like make you soup using only dehydrated Vegetables. She did that for me once. It was fascinating.
Really?
It was. I ordered some dehydrated fruit, which was really yummy. And my family ate it really Yeah. Quickly. And then I also ordered some dehydrated celery, like just like one Yeah. Can to taste it. Yeah. I did not order large quantities.
Yes.
And I haven't even opened the celery. It's in my garage.
And you cart it around from place to place.
I know. Oh, that's a whole other story.
That is a whole other story. Yeah.
We have a little, my husband and I have a little bit of food storage issues. Because he had a major back injury about 10 years ago that we blame on food storage. Like, for reals, not even kidding, he was lifting food storage and hurt his back. What happened is we were living in California, and my mother-in-law is a huge, she's a food storage lady. And so as young newlyweds, she was constantly giving us boxes of food storage, which was very sweet of her.
Yes,
but
it was.
As young newlyweds, we were not prepared to store or move the food storage around the country with us because at that time, we were not stable. We were still moving around and changing jobs.
Yeah, so, you didn't want to haul 1,000 pounds of food storage with you?
So she was very sweet. We lived in Southern California. She lived in Southern California. Every time she came to visit, she'd bring us more boxes of number 10 cans. So
what was in the number 10 cans? Do you even remember what was in the number 10 cans?
Wheat, beans, rice, sugar, anything and everything.
Okay.
You know, you're typical.
Yeah.
So after several years of this, we were getting ready to move across the country to go to grad school in Indiana. And so we kindly told my mother-in-law, we would like to give you your food storage back. Because the food storage did not make the cut for the cross-country trip to Indiana. We were on a very, very tight square footage space in our trailer.
So not only do you, like, this again begs the issue of food storage. So not only do you spend the money to buy the food storage, then you have to spend the money to cart it everywhere with you.
Yeah, not happening.
Okay,
So my mother-in-law came to our house one night, and my husband was loading all of the food storage into her car, giving it back to her. And he did something, picking up a box of number 10 cans. They must have been the heavy. What's the heaviest
beans
thing? Beans. The sugar is pretty heavy, too.
Oh, the sugar's heavy,
the
too.
The sugar is pretty heavy. I don't know what was in there. But lifting this box, he immediately felt something in his back. And, like, seriously, it led to a year's worth of, like, severe back pain.
Oh.
Like, his first year of grad school, he would lie on his back at home and project his computer screen onto the wall so that he could do his homework because he couldn't sit up straight in a chair.
Wow.
Had all kinds of physical therapy and steroid shots and x-rays and MRIs and trying to solve this issue. Anyway, he's since resolved it. But he's a little wary of food storage.
Understandably so.
For sure. So yeah, we have a tricky relationship with food storage in our family.
Okay. Well, and speaking of which, and we will get back to the article. Here's a funny thing. So last year when Arianna and Keith were looking at houses, I of course was, you know, looking with them because it needed the Tiffany stamp of approval.
Yes. Oh, the food storage house.
Yes. Yeah. And so there was one house that they really liked, in fact, made an offer on, but it didn't end up going through. But in touring the house, well, I'll let you explain what you saw in touring the house.
In touring the house, within like 2 minutes, we decided this was a Mormon house. I mean, you walk in and you see pictures on the wall of temples and things. So we knew this was a Mormon house. But when we went into the basement, another, you know, sure sign of a Mormon house, huge storage room in the basement with like shelves everywhere, which was awesome. Tons of food storage, number 10 cans everywhere. So we were just getting a good chuckle out of this. And we were like, hey, do you think that they would just leave their food storage for us?
That's what I said. I said, seriously, they're an older couple. They're downsizing. Do they really want to move their food storage? No, they don't really want to move their food storage. Just throw the food storage in the real estate contract. I think that that's what all Utah Mormons need to do when they're buying and selling in houses is the food storage goes with the house.
I was like seriously this close to calling our real estate agent and seeing if he would put it in the offer, but he wasn't Mormon. So I knew he would just look at me like I was insane.
For saying you want their food.
But seriously, how awesome would that be to buy a house that comes with food storage?
Exactly.
In the basement.
You don't have to worry about it. The elders or high priests in your ward don't have to move your food storage.
Right.
And you just go to a new house has its own set of food storage.
Nobody's going to touch it anyways.
Nobody's going to touch it. And it's really all the same thing. It's wheat, it's sugar, it's rice, it's beans.
So true. So true. So, yeah, back to this article. These ladies actually have a different take on food storage, which I really appreciate.
Yes.
I think it's a much more modern, practical approach to food storage.
Yes. They want to teach and educate people how to use your food storage in your everyday living. And that way you continually are rotating your food storage.
Right. And you do this a lot already.
I do this a lot already.
I think
so,
that they are more about, you know, buying extra of the things that you already use.
Exactly.
Not necessarily just plopping down a huge chunk of money.
Exactly.
A ton of number 10 cans you're never going to open. I think that there's saying that's good, but why yes. don't we just buy more of our regular everyday items?
And that's what they say is they say food mm-hmm. storage isn't just for when the world ends. Most of it, basic food storage products are used in our everyday cooking. It's just learning how to cook with it and learning that it's not scary to cook. So I think that they probably maybe incorporate some of their long-term
right.
items.
Yeah.
But, you know, basically it's kind of cooking from scratch, mm-hmm. so to speak. And so, I know for me that, you know, when there's a good case lot sale, you know, there are things that I use repeatedly, like canned tomatoes. Mm-hmm. I use an obscene amount of canned tomatoes in my cooking.
Right.
Black beans, chicken broth, things mm-hmm. like that. So whenever they're doing a case lot sale, I always try and stock up on those things and just usually try and keep about a 90-day supply of the right. things that I'm going to use every day in my regular cooking anyway. And that's kind of what they're doing. They apparently have some YouTube videos, and they have a YouTube channel entitled Everyday Food Storage to demonstrate the ways people can save time and energy by cooking with food storage every day.
I like it. I want to check them out. I haven't watched it yet.
I haven't watched it either. We'll have to check it out. And they do talk about the dehydrated and how sometimes the dehydrated, you know, while it's good and everything, can be very expensive. So
I know. It was fascinating. They figured out the price per pound of freeze-dried meat. And it comes out to like $15 a pound.
Which is insane.
Yeah.
Yes. And then they say another myth they want to dispel is that the church canneries and home storage centers no longer exist. Mm-hmm. And they say they're totally underutilized. And they are the best places to get all of the basics. They're mm-hmm. the cheapest. They fill the cans the most. And even if you don't live by a cannery, apparently you can order online.
Oh, so, right. Right.
You know, we're fortunate enough here that there is a local cannery. And if you go and do a shift at the cannery, they give you a little coupon. And you mm-hmm. can then take that coupon and you can go buy stuff in their warehouse with the coupon.
Oh, but I didn't know that. Is that how it works?
That's how it works.
So you can't buy stuff unless you do a shift.
You gotta go do a shift if you want to buy some stuff.
That's how they used to run it in Portland.
Uh-huh.
And sometime over the past couple of years, they switched it that you could just come and buy it whenever, which I don't know how they had enough people to actually can it. I don't know how they did that, but they did it, and it was great.
Well, I don't know. I mean, every time I've gone, they've given me a little coupon.
Right.
But now that I think about it, I went to the food storage place or the cannery, home storage center, at Christmas time and bought hot chocolate, and I didn't have to show a coupon then.
Oh.
So they at least sold me a very large bag of hot chocolate at Christmas time.
Okay. So maybe it depends on how much you're doing.
Exactly.
Because in Portland, you actually used to have to go can your own. You would sign up for an assignment and for what you wanted to can. And then your big group from your ward would go together and you would all help each other can your own. So you can it and you buy it right then.
Oh.
But then they got rid of that and said you could just come anytime and buy whatever.
Oh, no, so. I'm not aware that they've ever done that in Boise. I'm just aware that, like I said, they give you a little coupon that then lets you go in and buy stuff.
Okay.
So.
Well, I will have to check out.
We'll have to check that out.
The Boise Cannery, as soon as I can work myself up to a...
Well, and with that Boise River we were talking about earlier, the cannery's right on the river, and I think that they maybe have experienced a little bit of flooding.
Oh.
The Boise River, we had a record snowfall this winter, and so there's been lots of flooding, and so I don't know if they were closed for a period of time, but the water has receded, so probably we can check it out now.
Okay, we'll have to check it out, and we'll have to go check out these ladies' YouTube videos.
So. Yes.
So read the article if you want. You can find it on the TWIM link on the TWIM website.
Yes, and it was from the Church News.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think that about covers it for stories.
I think so.
Which means we have to move on to our favorite things.
All right, our favorite things. You want me to go first?
You go first.
Okay, this is my favorite thing for this week that I wanted to share with the world is Walmart pickup service. Have you tried this yet?
I have not tried the Walmart pickup service.
Okay. I had not tried it, but I kept seeing friends post about it on social media saying it's the best thing ever. So being a mom in the summer, now I have to go do my grocery shopping with all of my children with me, which is really hard. I didn't realize it would be that hard till, you know, you don't do it for a long time. And the first time I took them all, it was It's really difficult. My middle child's asking me like for everything. She's going through a phase right now where we walk through the store. Mom, can we buy gum? Mom, can we buy these crackers? Can we buy this? Can we buy this? Like every 10 seconds. And I'm saying, no.
After about five minutes, you just want to smack her and say, I am not buying a thing for you.
It's so exhausting. And I'm trying to concentrate on the list. And she's asking to buy everything. And the toddler is, you know, in the cart screaming. And I don't know what my other... So anyway, it's been very difficult. So I decided now that it's summer and grocery shopping is 10 times harder, I just needed to try the Walmart pickup service. So
okay, so tell me how this works.
It is amazing, like life-changing.
Okay.
This is changing my whole summer. So you put an app on your phone, Walmart little pickup service app. You do your shopping on the app. They have lovely pictures of everything you might want to buy and the price.
Can you buy more than just groceries? Can you, like if I'm running out of shampoo, can I say, throw the shampoo in the basket?
Yes, you can. I do think it has limits. Like, I don't think you could buy everything in the store, but shampoo for sure.
Okay.
You know, household items, all of that. Yes,
okay.
You can get them. So you just click them into your cart. And you place your order. So you do have to order at least $30 worth of stuff. And you place your order, and then you pick a window of time when you want to pick it up.
Okay, now when you place your order, do you give them your credit card at that point in time so it's already paid for?
Yeah, you already pay for it right then and there.
Okay.
And then you pick your window when you want to go pick it up. And so you do have to leave a certain amount of time, because I put my groceries in at midnight the night before, hoping to pick them up in the morning. But I think I had put them in after midnight, and so I wasn't able to pick them up until 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh.
Was like the earliest.
Oh.
But I think if you did it like the evening before, earlier in the evening, you could pick them up first thing in the morning.
Okay.
And if you do it in the morning, I'm sure you could pick it up later that afternoon. So then you pay, you pick your time window that you're going to pick it up, and then before you leave your house, you open your app and click on the button that says, you know, you're leaving, and it can track you through your app, and it can see.
Oh, like it's got a GPS?
Yeah, you have to let your phone let it follow you.
Ooh.
So, you know, you can't be too paranoid about the big Walmart watching your every move.
I'm not paranoid about watching my kids on 360, but I might be paranoid about the Walmart following
Walmart
me.
Watching you. I know. It's a little scary. You got to give up a little control.
Okay.
But worth it. So then you drive there, and when you get there, they know that you're there because it checks you in, and you just sit in your car. You click a little button that opens your trunk, and a nice Walmart man comes out and loads your groceries in your trunk.
Oh, get out of town.
And sends you on your way.
So do they have designated parking? Are you able to park like right up front?
They have special parking on the side of the building just for pickup.
Oh.
They come out. They load your truck. It was a hot day. He even gave me a refreshing bottle of water.
No way.
Yeah.
No way.
I know. I was like shocked because really Walmart is not necessarily known for like great customer service, right?
Yeah.
But they were wooing me.
Wow. Well, no wonder you were raving about it.
Yeah, it was fabulous. So it does take a little bit of planning. It can't be like, oh, I need chicken broth for dinner in an hour.
Yeah.
You got to plan ahead. But I thought it was awesome.
So if you're using that list app that we talked about a couple episodes ago, and you're making the list of what you need at Walmart, then you can just take that list and go click, 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 click.
Yep, you can. And I believe other stores are starting to do this too, because one of my friends in Portland was telling me that some of the Fred Meyers there have started. So if you are not a Walmart fan, Fred Meyer will soon be coming on board. I know that's a northwestern United States store, but I'm assuming probably all the stores will probably jump on board soon.
Well, and Albertsons, of course, is big in Idaho because they were founded here in Idaho. And I've seen that Albertsons, I think, you know what? I think theirs is a home delivery. I'm not sure if theirs is a pickup. I think they have a home delivery.
I think they do a home delivery. So.
Interesting.
So yes, I highly recommend trying it. And if you're going to try it, look online. There's a coupon. You can get $10 off your first order. I don't know how to get it. Just Google it and you'll find the coupon.
Okay.
So you got to try it.
I you know, I'll have to decide if I can live with Walmart tracking my moves.
I know. The other thing is you have to be able to live with Walmart picking out your produce.
So
that's a little iffy. I only ordered a couple produce things on the day that I ordered.
Okay.
Because, you know, I like to pick my own produce.
Yeah, but you know, if you're just getting, you know, milk and shampoo and bread and
lettuce. I'm not lettuce. Really picky about True. Lettuce, but True. My bananas, I gotta say, they didn't do the best job of picking my bananas.
They would not have been what you would have picked.
No, I like them green.
Me too. I want them to at least like last for a day or two.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so my favorite thing this week is, and I know I did a food thing last time, but I'm going to do a food thing again. It's watermelon. I absolutely love watermelon. It's one of my favorite fruits, and this time of year, watermelon is getting really, really good. You know, when you get into like May and early June, you pick your watermelons and, you know, they're red, but you taste them and they just don't have the flavor.
Yeah.
You know, by the time you hit early July, they just have the flavor. And if I'm thirsty, I always literally keep a big Tupperware thing of chopped up chopped up watermelon in my fridge. And so, you know, if I'm thirsty or something, I'll just go grab a fork and I'll just open up the thing and I'll just start chomping away on watermelon. And I like eating it. I don't feel guilty when I eat watermelon because I know I'm getting fiber and a whole lot of water with it.
Watermelon is delicious.
So anyway, so I want to just share with you my tips and tricks for picking a very good watermelon.
Them? Because I do not have good luck picking the big ones. The mini watermelons, I can usually pick a good one. I can never pick a good big one.
This is my tried and true method, okay. And I swear by it.
I need to know.
Okay. So you're going to look for two things when you're picking your watermelon. You're going to flip, and you want to look at the underside of the watermelon. You want to look to see if it has a nice yellow spot.
Okay.
Because if it has a nice yellow spot, that's where it's been sitting on the ground.
Okay.
So you want a nice, big, yellow spot. The other thing that you want to look for, which typically you would think, oh, I want to stay away from that, is, you know, when you look at the underside of the watermelon and you can kind of see the brown veiny things. And
right.
A lot of times you'll see those brown veiny things and like, I don't want that watermelon with brown veiny things.
Right.
You actually do want the watermelon with brown veiny things because that means that it was like pollinated a lot.
Okay.
And so that helps the flavor of it. So I'm always looking for a watermelon that has a big yellow spot on the bottom and lots of those brown veiny things to represent the pollination. And 9 times out of 10, when I do that, I get a very juicy, flavorful watermelon.
Well, there you go. I'll have to try again now that I know.
Now that you know, go try that and see if my tricks are tried and true.
Okay, I'll give it a try. And I will not let the Walmart people pick my watermelon.
Oh, yeah, you don't want to let the Walmart people pick your watermelon.
I don't know if they know that.
I think they would just grab whatever is on top. And, you know, then you'd be taking your best luck.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, well, I think that's it for us this week.
I think that's it for us this week, too. We appreciate you joining us. And if you have any questions or comments, I believe you can contact Al and Jeff at, contact at This Week in Mormons?
I think .com. I think so. Or go to the Facebook page.
Or go to the Facebook page and send them a message. If you want to comment about us, you can go to the Facebook page and send them a message. We appreciate you listening.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
It's over!